clear. Surviving together. Conditions for optimal success for a survivor group in a zombie apocalypse are a diverse, adequate, and flexible role repertoire and collaborative, complementary relationships among the members. Survivors in the group apply their skills and knowledge to multiple circumstances to the best of their abilities, and they adapt their roles from moment to moment. The members of the group must be able to build on and support one another, developing patterns of behavior and interactions that support survival, while being receptive to feedback when the system needs to adjust. If The Walking Dead featured these idealized groups, the audience would have little drama to enjoy. In the everyday world, one does not need to fear walker attacks or scavenge for supplies in the ruins of Atlanta. But the conditions for success are similar. Successful people modify their behavior and relationships to meet the changing circumstances in their lives. Ideally, they choose which of their many internal roles to play, though sometimes their internal parts seem to have a mind of their own. When they choose a role, or one seems to choose itself, for a situation and the choice turns out poorly, they reflect on whether they should make the same choice or modify their behavior in the future. The survivor groups portrayed in The Walking Dead provide a form of research. How people can best survive a zombie apocalypse, and how people can best survive the everyday world. Case File 5. The Claimers. Jonathan Hederle.
Seems to me like things are finally starting to fall together. At least for guys like us.
Joe.
Why hurt yourself when you can hurt other people?
Joe asks Daryl, summing up the dangerous nature of Joe's psychopathic survivor group that fans know as the Claimers. They contrast sharply with Rick's people. Daryl, the link between the two groups, faces his own evolving identity while navigating his place and role within each group. The Claimers' fate, which involves a darker turn in Rick's own character development, raises the question of whether he and Daryl are growing in different directions as they fight their way through their world. Primitive, childlike rules. Call the Claimers, by fans and those making The Walking Dead, for their practice of claiming what is theirs. Whether person, place, or thing, the group governs in the same vein as calling dibs in childhood. Calling dibs, or claiming, is actually done commonly among groups of men. Claiming the right to pursue a particular woman, for example, connotes the right to have the first chance to impress or hook up with her, and denotes that she is something to possess. Just as calling dibs fails to eliminate conflict between children, claiming does not prevent psychopathic behavior among group members. Claimers mislead, assault, and murder one another. Joe's solution to Daryl's and Len's dispute over a killed rabbit is to cut the animal in half, a skewed mimicry of what King Solomon proposed to do with a baby to settle a dispute between two women claiming to be the mother. The members of Rick's group attempt to live out consistent values with one another in the outside world. The Claimers view their relationship with the outside world as open season and use deadly force as their primary method, not as a last resort, to obtain goods for survival. At some point, Joe must have realized that their group would self-destruct if they took the same approach with one another, and so he installed the one key rule, claiming right or ownership. Despite consisting of grown men, the Claimers follow a simple, almost elementary style of governing. Claiming is the method Joe hopes will allow a group of psychopaths to play together and eliminate their poor behavioral controls, violence, and violation of fellow claimers' rights. Identity, community, and belonging. The Claimers challenge Daryl to face his own identity and answer the questions, who am I, who do I belong with, and why? The group also poses the question of how much Daryl can be led into sociopathic behaviors by shared environmental factors. Daryl has been repeatedly in search of someone, whether it be Sophia, Beth, or even Merle, the brother who pounded into Daryl a belief that he was inadequate and could not make it alone. Joe accepts Daryl, and each may identify with the other on some level, starting with their mutual appreciation for crossbows.
Once Joe and his guys ambush Rick, Carl, and Michonne, though, Daryl recognizes that any traits and characteristics he and Joe share are superficial, outward, or outdated. The claimers, unlike Daryl, exhibit behaviors associated with psychopathy, including violence, sexual offenses, and absence of empathy. Joe represents a less mature version of Daryl, or a version of what Daryl would be if he had fallen in with the wrong group. Character arc and identity development. The claimers highlight Daryl's long journey and transformation from a redneck, racist rebel to an integral member of a diverse group of survivors. Joe's demise at Rick's hands, or teeth, contrasts starkly with Daryl's growth. Rick resorts, however justifiably, to more primal survival tactics, mirroring Joe and the group's savagery. This soon becomes evident during the main character's escape from Terminus, when Rick wants not just to escape, but also to kill everyone at Terminus, whether for revenge or for preservation. Claiming does not end with Joe's group. After psychopaths claim people, places, and things as possessions, Rick and company face cannibals claiming people for food, followed by Officer Dawn claiming people as wards, her slaves. "He's one of mine," Dawn tells Rick regarding Noah, a ward who escaped from her. "You have no claim on him."
"We didn't survive just to keep surviving," Bob assures the cynical Sasha. Carl Gustav Jung, Abraham Maslow, Carl Rogers, C. Robert Cloninger, and others in psychology have said that people feel a deep need for transcendence, a need beyond other needs, a yen to go beyond the here and now. For those who keep asking and wondering what we can become, life is about more than walking. The journey itself can be lived all along the way. By growing from an alcoholic loner who aches for a bottle to get him through the night into an idealist who sticks by friends, fosters their growth, and finds the good that could come out of every bad thing, Bob transcends circumstances. "Nightmares end," he tells Rick. "They shouldn't end who you are." Even as he lies dying, he encourages others to live. Part 5. Living. 17. What would you do? Finding meaning in tragic circumstances, a bite-sized intro to existential psychology. Dana Klisanen. Dale could get under your skin. He sure got under mine, because he wasn't afraid to say exactly what he thought, how he felt. That kind of honesty is rare and brave. In the end, he was talking about losing our humanity. Rick Grimes. The Walking Dead, a post-apocalyptic horror story about zombies, is one of the most bizarre and popular comic books and television series in the history of either medium. How could we account for its success? Existential psychology may hold some answers. The Walking Dead is an existentialist's dream, nightmare. Nearly everyone who watches it comes away wondering what he or she would do in a similar situation. For some viewers, the show goes even further, provoking a wide range of tumultuous thoughts and feelings. One loyal fan found herself wishing for the death of Dale, a character pleading to spare the life of a prisoner who can endanger the whole group if he gets loose. When Dale ended up being killed in a total gruesome Walking Dead fashion, the fan felt so terrible that she began to question her morality. Although it's extremely unlikely that we will ever confront zombie hordes, at some point in life we all face death, our own and that of our loved ones. This intersection of life and death, of love and loss, of anxiety and despair, of our ability or inability to find meaning in life, is the subject matter of existential philosophy, and its offspring, existential psychology. It is called existential because instead of focusing on the essence of human beings, as other areas of psychology do, existentialists focus on existence. Whereas essence implies a static, unchanging substance, existence implies emerging, becoming, and changing. Existential philosophy states that we humans have free will, and must use it to find and create meaning in our lives, as the character Herschel Green suggests when he says that they each have the power to choose what they risk their lives for instead of merely trying to survive without purpose. Existentialists believe that the individual must be studied as a being in the world, rather than solely from an objective or exterior point of view. Existentialism emphasizes a balance between freedom and responsibility. Some of the first existential psychologists were Ludwig Binswanger, Medard Boss, Abraham Maslow, Rollo May, and Viktor Frankl. The psychologist Rollo May, 1909 to 1994, and the psychiatrist Viktor Frankl, 1905 to 1997, each came extremely close to death but survived. Their respective experiences provided them with insights that shaped their approaches to psychotherapy. May's close encounter with death came in the form of tuberculosis, a lung disease for which there was no cure at the time of his illness. May entered a sanatorium and for well over a year did not know whether he would live or die. While there, he noticed that the patients around him who passively accepted the disease tended to die, whereas those who fought against it tended to survive. He found that when he asserted his will to live and developed a sense of personal responsibility for his illness, he began to make lasting progress. May said that when our existence or values are threatened, we experience anxiety, but to be fully alive, we must confront our non-being or death. He wasn't implying that we need to be diagnosed with a fatal illness or battle zombies at every turn, the way Rick Grimes and the other TWD survivors do, but rather that through thinking about and acknowledging death, by being consciously aware of it rather than fearing it, people simultaneously become more conscious of life. Viktor Frankl found the same truths, but his personal confrontation with death was far more horrific, and thus closer to the experiences faced by Rick and the other characters in The Walking Dead. Instead of zombies, the horror Frankl experienced came in the form of Nazis. His father, mother, brother, and wife all died at their hands. As a prisoner in Auschwitz and other concentration camps, Frankl used his experiences later to write Man's Search for Meaning, An Introduction to Logotherapy. In the preface to Frankl's book, the renowned psychologist Gordon Allport asks the question that many of us ask about various characters in The Walking Dead. How could he, every possession lost, every value destroyed, suffering from hunger, cold, and brutality, hourly expecting extermination, find life worth preserving? The will to keep walking. The way Rick feels when he wakes up to find himself alone, without his family, in a world filled with zombies, must be something like what Viktor Frankl felt when the Nazis took over Germany and began conquering Europe, rounding up Jewish citizens and moving them first into ghettos and then to death camps. At the concentration camps, Frankl saw piles of dead bodies and rotten human flesh firsthand. Although it may seem that Rick and other characters adjust too quickly to the shocking events and circumstances, Frankl tells us that after the initial shock, he and the other prisoners quickly became numb and felt apathy, the blunting of emotions and the feeling that one does not care anymore. In a real-life story of rotting flesh, he tells of a prisoner who watched without disgust, horror, or pity as the black, gangrenous stumps that once had been the toes of a 12-year-old boy were picked off one by one with tweezers. How did Frankl continue to endure daily suffering? In the following passage, he gives us a clue. We stumbled on in the darkness, over big stones and through large puddles, along the one road leading from the camp. The accompanying guards kept shouting at us and driving us with the butts of their rifles. Anyone with very sore feet supported himself on his neighbor's arm. Hardly a word was spoken. The icy wind did not encourage talk. Hiding his mouth behind his upturned collar, the man marching next to me whispered suddenly, "If our wives could see us now, I do hope they are better off in their camps and don't know what is happening to us." That brought thoughts of my own wife to mind. And as we stumbled on for miles, slipping on icy spots, supporting each other time and again, dragging one another up and onward, nothing was said, but we both knew. Each of us was thinking of his wife. As he made his way through the darkness, Frankel did not know if his wife was alive or dead. All he knew was that thinking of her renewed his will to live. At the beginning of The Walking Dead, Rick finds himself in a similar situation. When he wakes up in the hospital and then makes his way into the zombie-filled world, Rick's first thoughts are of his wife and son. He immediately makes his way home, where he hopes to find them alive. Frankel's thoughts of his wife led him to make the following discovery. A thought transfixed me. For the first time in my life, I saw the truth as it is set into song by so many poets, proclaimed as the final wisdom by so many thinkers. The truth, that love is the ultimate and the highest goal to which man can aspire. I understood how a man who has nothing left in this world still may know bliss, be it only for a brief moment, in the contemplation of his beloved. In a position of utter desolation, when man cannot express himself in positive action, when his only achievement may consist in enduring his sufferings in the right way, an honorable way, in such a position, man can, through loving contemplation of the image he carries of his beloved, achieve fulfillment. Just as Frankel clung to the vision of his beloved wife, Rick clings to the hope that his wife and son are alive. He tells Morgan Jones that he believes they must have left in time because the family photo albums are missing. It is love that keeps Rick moving forward. For Morgan Jones, in contrast, it is love for his wife that has placed him in an existential dilemma. Should he shoot her now that she has become a zombie? Can he kill the woman he loves to save her from a fate worse than death? Is it the right thing to do? What would Frankel tell us? Frankel named his type of psychotherapy logotherapy, from the Greek word logos, signifying meaning. He described logotherapy as focusing on the meaning of human existence as well as on man's search for such meaning. He explained his approach as a will to meaning, in contrast with other forms of psychotherapy, such as Freudian psychoanalysis's pleasure principle, or will to pleasure, and Adlerian psychology's focus on will to power. It is different from psychoanalysis because it considers man a being whose main concern consists in fulfilling a meaning rather than in the gratification and satisfaction of drives and instincts, or in merely reconciling the conflicting claims of id, ego, and superego, or in the mere adaptation and adjustment to society and environment. If we look to logotherapy for an answer to Morgan's dilemma, that is, whether he should shoot his undead wife, Frankel would tell us that it depends on how Morgan constructs meaning in his life. He would remind us that we do not live in a closed system, but rather that we live in relationships as a being in the world. In other words, when we look within ourselves, we must simultaneously recognize that we are not living in isolation. Our judgments must reflect our interdependence with other people and the natural world. If Morgan constructs his meaning on the basis of his love for his wife, shooting her can be understood as a means of loving her. But there is something more than love that Morgan needs if he is to carry out this difficult action. To kill the walker that was his wife, he needs courage. Rollo May said, "Courage is not a virtue or value among other personal values like love or fidelity. It is the foundation that underlies and gives reality to all other virtues and personal values." Let's consider one more example that appears both in the first issue of The Walking Dead and later in the first television episode. Even though the female zombie Rick encounters upon leaving the hospital poses no threat to him, just before leaving for Atlanta, he seeks her out and kills her. Rick's motivation appears to be compassion. In other words, he kills her because he wants to end her suffering. Later stories may give us reason to question some of Rick's decisions and actions, but when his adventure begins, we clearly see his physical and moral courage. Questions. This chapter posed two questions. One, how can we account for the phenomenal success of The Walking Dead? And two, how would we behave if we found ourselves in a post-apocalyptic world? Existential psychology tells us that it is through recognizing our being in the world and confronting its opposite, non-being, that we find ourselves most fully alive. Rather than framing human beings in terms of instinctual drives and ego gratification, it asserts the primacy of free will. It tells us that we have the ability to find meaning in our lives, even amid great suffering, and that it is through taking personal responsibility for our lives that we embrace our freedom. Because The Walking Dead is a story about survival, it speaks directly to questions of life and death, morality, and meaning. On a collective level, existential psychology would suggest that while watching the characters struggle to stay alive, we are projecting our own fear of death as a way to confront it vicariously rather than directly. However, at the individual level, if the show prompts us to reflect on existential questions, we are no longer projecting our fears, but instead consciously engaging with them. The show's remarkable success may well be due to its ability to speak to both types of viewers, those who harbor unconscious fears, and those who are using it to prompt existential introspection. That brings us to the second question. What would we do if we found ourselves in a post-apocalyptic world? How would we treat others? Would we betray friends and kill others to survive? Existential psychology tells us that it is impossible for anyone except you to answer that question. But before we begin patting ourselves on the back and imagining we'd take the moral high ground, let's revisit Viktor Frankl one last time. His ordeal in the concentration camps ranks among the closest approximations we have of life in a post-apocalyptic world. In the circumstances he describes, the chances are that we'd find ourselves doing things we cannot currently imagine. In a particularly poignant passage, he tells us, "On the average, only those prisoners could keep alive who, after years of trekking from camp to camp, had lost all scruples in their fight for existence. They were prepared to use every means, honest and otherwise, even brutal force, theft, and betrayal of their friends, in order to save themselves. We who have come back, by the aid of many lucky changes or miracles, whatever one may choose to call them, we know the best of us did not return." Courage. In tragic circumstances, people will suffer anxiety, grief, and despair. But existential psychology tells us that if we have the courage to look for it, we can still find meaning in life.
18. Hillbilly to Hero, The Transformation of Daryl Dixon. Stephen Kuniak and Megan Blink. Beth, you got to stay who you are, not who you were. Places like this, you have to put away. Daryl, what if you can't? Beth, you have to, or it kills you. Many characters in The Walking Dead undergo transformations as they adapt to their new, harder, and harsher world. The Dixon brothers, however, have already lived a tougher lifestyle than most. While Merle Dixon eventually joins the Woodbury survivors, who can make use of his more belligerent approach, his baby brother, Daryl Dixon, whose allure is as complex as his story, evolves. At first, Daryl seems an outsider, a loner and a loose cannon, lost in his call to adventure, but he grows into a resourceful and selfless character. His journey is fascinating and, what's more, easy to relate to. Daryl is a symbol, an example, who fits an archetype for heroes in literature, film, and religion. Fans love Daryl for the hope he instills in them for the Walking Dead story, and also for their own life journeys. Daryl's transformation is not unlike the transformations in our own lives, though more visible with him, because it is set against the backdrop of an undead apocalypse. The ability to relate to a character was critical to the psychologist Bruno Bettelheim's theory about fairy tales.
Bettelheim said that fairy tales are important to us because we can learn important life lessons through their imagery. Not only is this particularly important for children, but fairy tale images are universal, and therefore can be understood across cultures and ages. Tales from childhood can still inspire adults and teach values. In the same way, characters such as Daryl can show us how to become a better person, despite adversity and danger. The Hillbilly Hero's Journey. Building on the work of Carl Jung, the psychiatrist who originally proposed that all people have inherited archetypes, unconscious themes, Joseph Campbell outlined an archetypal hero that exists in all storytelling since humankind's very beginning. In considering the human psyche, Campbell was influenced strongly by Jung's archetypes of meaning. Campbell provided a model common among all heroes. This model outlined cornerstones of the journey as the hero receives a call to adventure and begins a resurrection quest. Although not every heroic story covers every aspect of the hero's journey that Campbell identified, this robust model covers a wide range of epic tales found in cultures far and wide. How does this epic journey relate to Daryl? Is he really comparable to heroes such as King Arthur? The truth is that he's more comparable than many people might think, and those similarities hold the key to why he's so beloved. Ordinary World. In this initial stage of the hero's journey, the fledgling hero appears in a raw form. We are introduced to the hero's world without any of the experiences that will play a part in shaping the transformation. Daryl reveals pieces of his humble beginnings through occasional anecdotes. This sharing is somewhat symbolic of his character evolution and his opening to other characters. His older brother, Merle, an abuser of drugs and alcohol, spends the bulk of Daryl's childhood in juvenile detention. Daryl describes his mother as an alcoholic who died in a house fire when he was young, burnt to nothing, and his father as an abusive dumbass who noticed Daryl only when he was bad. Daryl recounts that as a boy, he once got lost in the woods for 9 days, and his father never noticed he was gone. Before the apocalypse, he drifted and did whatever Merle wanted. I was nobody, nothing, some redneck asshole with an even bigger asshole for a brother. According to Merle, the brothers had been traveling to Atlanta for safety when they met the group, but they joined the group while planning to rob them. Call to Adventure. The call to adventure provides the catalyst for the hero's transformation. Circumstances that go beyond the average day-to-day experiences of the hero begin to take shape and cause the unformed protagonist to make decisions about acting differently from what would have been the status quo. The undead herald an opportunity for change. Already mentioned by group members who call him a handful, who is unlikely to respond rationally upon learning that his brother has been left behind on a roof, Daryl first appears in the series yelling, "Son of a bitch, that's my deer!" as a walker devours the animal he has shot with his crossbow. He swears, yells racial slurs, and is confrontational. His impatience and emotionality isolate him from other group members. Early in the story, he is presented as an impulsive, unpredictable hillbilly and a lone wolf in the group. Daryl also is presented as capable and skillful. Joseph Campbell notes that the classic epic journey often includes the hero obtaining a mystical weapon as key in his development. Daryl's crossbow is practically his Excalibur in this post-apocalyptic world. The classic hero wields a weapon typically presented as unique to that hero, whether that weapon is an item, Excalibur, a powerful trait, Samson's strength, or belief, many heroes' faith, that guides the hero through his world. The other survivors' respect and admiration for Daryl evolves as they depend on his gifts. Daryl saves T-Dog from a group of walkers by covering them both in corpses to hide from the walkers, one of many times when Daryl's quick thinking saves others. When Carol's daughter, Sophia, goes missing, Daryl is quick to volunteer to lead the search, showing his hunting, tracking, and skinning skills, along with his willingness to step up. His desperation to find Sophia probably reflects his longing for someone to have searched for him in the same way when he was a child. People commonly play themes such as this from their pasts as they traverse their journeys. Many heroes experience transformative spirit journeys as a part of their adventure. This experience, which gives the hero an opportunity to face and begin to put to rest past conflicts, is symbolic of the hero's struggle to let go of conflicts that hold people back in life. Alone and continuing his search for Sophia, Daryl gets injured and starts hallucinating. Hallucinatory Merle harasses him about his failed attempts to find Sophia, spouting venomous comments that include calling him names such as a joke and a worthless ass. Merle belittles Daryl's convictions and willingness to die to save a little girl. Hallucination Merle chides Daryl for joining the group, telling him he is nothing but a freak to the group members as they view him as redneck trash, and asserts that they are not kin, and no one but Merle will ever care about Daryl. These statements, coming from Daryl's unconscious mind, reflect his internal dialogue and relate to his self-identity. At this point, Daryl's identity within the group, his social identity, is evolving from a liability to an asset. Daryl has difficulty accepting this identity as he has been conditioned to believe he is nothing. However, he begins to challenge these beliefs with statements to Merle such as, "You talk a big game, but you were never there." Though Daryl has begun the transformative process, it is clear that his worst fears still haunt him in his relationship. Refusal of the call. The developing hero, in spite of the new circumstances, is often unsure or unwilling to step out of his previous lifestyle. We often experience the same apprehension when we know we should make a change in our lives. Even when the change is very necessary, our discomfort with the unfamiliar gives us pause. Despite his growth, the other survivors still form expectations of Daryl that are based on his past aggressive nature. When the group captures Randall, Daryl is tasked with questioning him and beats him to obtain information. He has his own beliefs about what should be done, but doesn't challenge Rick's decision to test his power within the group. Since in the past he blindly followed Merle, Daryl probably still lacks confidence to stand up for what he believes. Daryl is, at this point, unwilling to accept the call to be a hero, not yet ready to challenge his conflicting beliefs about himself and take on a role in the hierarchy. Meeting the Mentor. The rookie hero encounters a character who is able to become an instructor of sorts. The mentor is someone who believes in the hero in his early stages, often seeing something in him that no one else does. The mentor helps foster the internal strengths that are growing and developing within the new hero. As Daryl continues his journey, he experiences another component of Campbell's heroic structure, the mentor. Despite their initial impressions of each other, Rick becomes a trusted guide and friend for Daryl. Early in the series, Daryl's willingness to give in to his anger is frequently stopped by Rick. Over time, Daryl takes on some of these teachings, and though still a man of action, becomes much more level-headed. As they prepare to make camp in the prison, Daryl is called out multiple times by Rick for support, and is seen literally at Rick's right hand as they push through the prison doors. When two sets of keys are obtained for the prison, Rick gives one to Daryl. This symbolizes his status within the group. Tests, allies, enemies. The hero will meet individuals who will help support growth, and others who will seek to do the learning hero harm. Additionally, the learner will have skills and will be tested over and over. These people, experiences, and trials all mirror the same opportunities for growth we each encounter in life. The other players and occurrences in the hero's story help shape the hero into the legend that he will become. Many heroes need individuals who can support them in understanding their conflicted nature. Carol is one of Daryl's biggest allies. Because her traumatic background relates to Daryl's upbringing, and because they share past feelings of powerlessness, worthlessness, and isolation, Carol challenges his negative self-concept. She tells Daryl that he did more for Sophia than her father ever did. Despite Daryl's pulling himself away from many personal relationships, Carol continues to see his true nature. He tries to push people away by acting out in old ways, such as calling Carol a stupid bitch for worrying about him. Rejection is less frightening than accepting his value. These doubts act as a threshold guardian, or a force that stands in his way. We are often our own worst enemies in becoming the person we wish to be. In many heroic sagas, the hero has a unique and often familial relationship with an antagonistic character. The hero is often unable to accept his relationship to the evil presence, or tries to rationalize the antagonist's intentions. When Merle is found alive in Woodbury, Daryl has to face these realities. Despite Merle's actions in beating Glenn, Daryl insists on working something out with his brother. Rick pleads that he needs Daryl, and though he stands by Rick, Daryl is still conflicted. When Merle attempts to join the group after the fall of Woodbury, the group rejects him. Daryl's sense of responsibility for Merle is stronger than Rick's assertion that Daryl is part of his family now. Ultimately, his guilt over leaving his brother once before leads him to depart from the group. Crossing the Threshold. Though Campbell's outline follows a particular order, there is no indication that every hero will follow the same steps in that order. Daryl's unique story fits better in this order. Crossing the threshold occurs when the hero is able to accept who he or she is becoming, and begins to explore his or her personal evolution. Daryl slips back into old habits around Merle, allowing Merle to berate him and mirroring mannerisms, for example, spitting when Merle spits. After rescuing a passing group on the road, Merle attempts to rob them, until Daryl threateningly holds his bow to his brother's head and saves them. Daryl's defiance of Merle is out of character in light of their past relationship. The brothers fight, and Daryl eventually asserts that he's returning to the group where he belongs. Daryl states, "I may be the one walking away, but you're the one that's leaving. Again." At this point, Daryl is truly challenging his past. Carol encourages Daryl upon his return. "Don't let him bring you down. After all, look how far you've come." Carol already has seen Daryl transforming, even though he still struggles to acknowledge it for himself. He pulls himself away from Merle's influence when he sees Merle up to his old tricks, searching for alcohol and narcotics in the prison. After Merle kidnaps Michonne to deliver her to the governor, though, Daryl still feels some responsibility for his brother, and begins to search for them. Michonne tells Merle that his brother is now a well-respected member of the group, that Rick needs Daryl, and that Daryl has got a new family. When Daryl ultimately finds Merle, he has been killed by the governor and has turned into a walker. Daryl weeps. He pushes Merle the walker away, before finding the courage to kill him. A profound moment for Daryl, as he reflects not only on the fate of his brother, but also on what life without him would mean. Daryl's entrance in Season 4, when the original group and the remaining Woodbury survivors have merged as a larger group that is secure in the prison, is a stark contrast to that in Season 1. Instead of dreading his arrival, the group members are eager to greet and thank him. Some shake his hand and admiringly guess what he did before the apocalypse. He is now a council member at the prison, and the community depends on him for many tasks. Daryl, ironically, is even seen de-escalating fights between other members of the group. When the governor returns to drive them from the prison, Rick looks to Daryl to help him decide what to do. Daryl Dixon has established himself as reliable, resourceful, and valuable to the group. Ordeal, Death, and Rebirth. Heroes get challenged at the core of who they are, and if they make it through this stage, come out reforged on the other side. The ordeal puts to the test all the changes the heroes have made. They must look into themselves and shake off any of the old people they once were. This death of the old self allows each hero to be reborn as the new, legendary person he or she was always destined to become. These final experiences do not signify a complete end to the hero's journey. The hero will continue to be challenged and to evolve, just as we are challenged and grow as individuals. Though the evolution never truly stops, at this stage the hero's old form is almost unrecognizable in light of this newer form. Beth evolves as a significant ally of Daryl. After they lose the prison, Daryl is beaten down. Beth observes that he seems without hope, and without faith. Yet every time she runs off in frustration, he is there to take her back. Daryl and Beth begin to bond through discussion of past regrets and personal philosophies as they continue to seek the other members of their group. Daryl discusses his struggle to continue moving forward in the face of the guilt he feels over not having been able to stop the attack on the prison. He also discusses how the cabin where they were staying reminds him of his childhood home. The pair then burn down the house and symbolically give it the middle finger as they leave. Another step in working to leave the past behind. Fate tests Daryl again when someone kidnaps Beth. In his desperation, he joins a group of renegade survivors who have harsh rules and swift justice for their members. The group's leader, Joe, continuously challenges Daryl that he is more a part of their renegade group than he wants to believe, stating, "Ain't nothing sadder than an outside cat who thinks he's an indoor cat." When Joe's group comes upon and tries to execute Rick, Michonne, and Carl, Daryl offers himself as a sacrifice. Daryl and his real friends are able to defeat Joe and his fellow psychopaths. Afterward, Rick assures Daryl that he couldn't have truly joined these cruel survivors, and that Daryl, his brother, is back where he belongs. The hero's journey is not a linear process. It is complicated and messy, just as life is for us. Daryl continues to navigate the path from who he was to who he wants to be. Themes of fire continue to arise as symbols of Daryl's transformation. He is still changing and exploring who he is as a person and as a member of the group. Campbell, as was mentioned before, may indicate a particular direction for the hero's journey, but he doesn't state that it is universal for every hero. It seems as though Daryl is still a work in progress on his own heroic journey. He is seeking to understand himself, but still struggling with the juxtaposition of who he was and who he is becoming. This is also something most viewers can relate to on some level. We often don't show our true selves even to the ones we love for fear of rejection, or fear that acknowledging our pain somehow makes it more real. Daryl tells Carol, "We ain't ashes." He is not someone who has been consumed or used up by the apocalypse. Rather, he is negotiating and shedding his past self and will come out changed on the other side. Daryl has always been a survivor, but it takes the apocalypse to teach him what it truly means to live. Daryl, "You said I ain't like how I was before?" Carol, "Yeah." Daryl, "How was I?" Carol, "It's like you were a kid. Now you're a man." Heroes and Hope. Daryl's evolution across the seasons of The Walking Dead provides an example of the power of heroes to draw us into their tales and inspire us. He has taken his trauma and his pain and channeled them into protecting others. He has learned to give love to others and accept love for himself. He has let go of his fears and begun to be reborn. He is a flawed character who, like all heroes, has become a symbol of hope. This inspires fans to make changes in their own lives. If Daryl can transform from a ruffian into a leader and protector, what can others accomplish? Walkers do not fill the real world, but the opportunity for greatness is all around. Real people from an ordinary world can underestimate their own potential. Heroes are not rare or chosen. Heroes are universal. Heroes such as Daryl are important because they give hope for something greater to shine from any human being. 19. Finding Your Purpose in the Zombie Apocalypse. Clay Rutledge. "We get to start over, all of us, with each other." Daryl Dixon. "You sleep in shifts. You can't risk letting a walker sneak up on you while you slumber. It is not like it used to be, when you could just collapse at the end of a long day and drift away, forgetting your troubles. And when you are not sleeping or trying to sleep, you must focus on immediate concerns. Hunger. You reminisce about the old days before the walkers, when you thought you knew hunger. How naive you were. You remember that book you once read about the Great Depression, in which you found people's anecdotes about hunger fascinating? The physical pain, the ever-present longing for nourishment, the nightly dreams about food. Now you understand. But food, though a source of constant distress, isn't your only or even your most pressing concern. Walkers. Death waits around every corner. Your group tries to create a place where you can all feel safe. But deep down, you know safety is ultimately an illusion. If the walkers don't get you, another human may. The laws and moral conventions that once maintained some level of social harmony are long gone. But each day you start again. What choice do you have? This is the world of the walking dead. The world you would find yourself in if a zombie apocalypse occurred. Terrifying. Yet if you are like so many people, something about this scenario sounds seductive, even exciting to you. Humans have long been fascinated by the concept of an apocalypse. Many religions contain apocalyptic narratives or prophecies about end times. Secular apocalyptic beliefs are also common. Some believe the world as we know it will be destroyed as a result of human actions. For example, climate change, nuclear war. Nearly half of the Americans polled by the Public Religion Research Institute reported believing that recent natural disasters are part of the end times. And over a third of those surveyed by National Geographic believed an apocalyptic event similar to the one portrayed in the movie The Day After Tomorrow could happen in the next 25 years. Considering the prevalence of apocalyptic beliefs, perhaps it should not be surprising that people love apocalyptic media. In recent years, the plots of many top-grossing movies have centered on end-of-the-world scenarios, such as global viral epidemics, asteroid strikes, alien invasions, and, of course, the zombie apocalypse. At the epicenter of this zombie craze is The Walking Dead, the zombie movie that never ends. Post-apocalyptic meaning. Humans are existential animals, striving for purpose and meaning. Humans do not simply want to survive. We want to matter, to feel we are significant contributors to a meaningful world. We need to matter. A large body of research in psychology demonstrates that people who perceive their lives as meaningless are more likely to suffer from mental illness and addiction. They are less able to cope with stress and trauma, slower to recover from illness, and less likely to live long, productive lives compared with those who perceive their lives as being full of meaning. Also, finding meaning is an important component of many mental health therapies. For example, one study showed that psychotherapy more effectively improved mood and well-being if the patient displayed increased perceptions of meaning in life. Things that help people perceive meaning in life include feeling that one can have an enduring impact on the world, believing that one is growing into the person he or she truly wants to be, or has the potential to be, sensing that one has triumphed in the face of challenge or adversity, and experiencing close social bonds. A zombie apocalypse provides an attractive opportunity for people to explore and even fantasize about each of these paths to meaning in life. Case 1. Daryl Dixon. Consider the character Daryl Dixon. Before the zombie apocalypse, his life arguably lacks purpose or direction. Daryl grows up in an abusive household and becomes a drifter with no real goals, ambitions, or, as far as we can tell, meaningful relationships besides his troubled bond with his brother. In the aftermath of the zombie apocalypse, Daryl gets an opportunity to reinvent himself, to find new meaning and purpose. As a hunter and tracker, Daryl possesses skills that once might have made him the butt of redneck jokes, but have incredible value in the new world. The apocalypse causes Daryl's social stock to skyrocket. As part of a group of survivors, he also has the opportunity to develop, for the first time, quality relationships involving mutual trust and respect, the kinds of relationships that have been shown to increase perceptions of meaning in life by making people feel truly valued. Case 2. Carol Peltier. Other characters in The Walking Dead take different paths to meaning, but their paths also highlight the pursuits of personal growth and triumph. Carol Peltier first appears as a soft-spoken, submissive wife, lacking the will or ability to stand up to her abusive, domineering husband. Soon, though, Carol finds an inner strength, as the zombie apocalypse forces her to become tough and independent. As she continues to face personal tragedy, Carol further comes into her own. As she grapples with her personal demons, she also struggles to find her own strength without losing her humanity. This balance proves difficult. With dramatic ups and downs, eventually the graphic novel version of Carol gives up and commits suicide by Walker, whereas the television Carol evolves into a tough-as-nails warrior and a reluctant leader. These divergent paths taken by the graphic novel and the television show highlight the importance of finding meaning for mental health and even survival. Research shows that those who give up on finding meaning are at risk for depression and suicide, whereas those who are able to find meaning after traumatic experiences tend to become psychologically well-adjusted, ultimately. Case 3. Rick Grimes. The protagonist, Rick Grimes, offers a different narrative. Before the zombie apocalypse, by many standards, Rick leads a life of purpose. As a law enforcement officer, he serves a vital social function. As a husband and father, he's also a family man, though his marriage is not without conflict. After the apocalypse, once Rick awakens from a coma, his life becomes focused on finding and protecting his family. He eventually finds himself in a leadership position in a group of survivors. Rick's journey is not about becoming the person he could be, as much as it is about having the person he is tested. In a world that has lost its way, Rick struggles to maintain his moral compass, his compassion for others, and his belief in justice. Rick must shoulder the burden of being responsible for others, of balancing the often competing goals of keeping people safe and holding on to his humanity in an inhuman world. Rick, like so many others, faces personal tragedy. He also is forced to make seemingly impossible choices that threaten to break his will and his sanity. Through Rick's story, fans can imagine being forced to focus on what is truly important in life: family, personal integrity, resilience in the face of despair, each of which has been shown to contribute to perceptions of meaning. Rick shows viewers that one's meaning and purpose may best be revealed by hardship. In the zombie apocalypse, Rick becomes much more than a small-town deputy. These are just a few examples of how the stories of the different characters in The Walking Dead reflect a human struggle to find purpose and meaning. Each character has his or her own existential journey, and as fans, we get to go along for the ride. Real life is often full of mundane activities: sitting in traffic on the way to work, buying groceries, paying bills, cleaning house, arguing with our children about turning off the video games and doing their homework. Amid all these responsibilities, hassles, and distractions, it is easy to forget what it is that makes our lives feel meaningful. Indeed, daily frustrations as well as lack of meaningful stimulation can make us feel that our lives lack meaning. In a zombie apocalypse, however, things would be different. People would be forced to prioritize what is important, to hold on tightly to those they cherish the most. Materialistic concerns would largely evaporate. No more car payments, mortgages, or cell phone bills. Life would be stripped down to the basics. People would have to dig deep and live up to their true potential, because everyone's contribution would matter. In the brutal and bloody struggle to survive in a world full of zombies, some people would find their true meaning and purpose. Zombies lack meaning. Humans enjoy fantasizing about a zombie apocalypse, in part because it allows them to imagine opportunities to find greater purpose and meaning. Again, as we've asked throughout this book, why a zombie apocalypse in particular? Any kind of apocalyptic scenario that involves survivors forging their way in a new world would offer the ingredients for meaning. What is it about zombies that captivate us? Zombies may fascinate us because they help us confront perhaps our most basic existential fear: mortality. Humans, more than any other species, are able to contemplate the nature of mortal existence. We know that despite all efforts to survive and thrive, death is inescapable. We can exercise, eat our vegetables, wear seat belts, and get regular health screenings in an effort to live long and healthy lives. But still, we must die. Psychologists have argued that this knowledge of certain death can sometimes lead to mental problems. For example, increasing the awareness of death by having people write about being mortal increases both generalized anxiety and anxiety about death. So what are people to do? A large body of research in social psychology indicates that death awareness motivates people to focus on the goal of living lives that offer enduring meaning. The feeling that one is part of something, or has made a contribution that will transcend the death of the physical body. Sure, we endeavor to stay healthy and avoid physical harm. Why else would anyone eat broccoli, or get a colonoscopy, or mammogram? Critically, though, we strive to make our mark, to find enduring meaning. By living lives of meaning, we are able to attach ourselves to the symbolic structures, for example, family, nation, religion, that continue to live long after we are gone. When people feel that they are part of something that transcends death, for example, their nation and religion, or have made contributions that will allow them to live on in the memories of others, they experience a sense of meaning that, in turn, reduces the fear of death and promotes psychological health. A life of meaning takes the sting, or at least some of it, out of death. Zombies are physical bodies, nothing more. They lack the morals, beliefs, feelings, and goals that give human life enduring meaning. A religious person might describe zombies as meaningless because they lack souls, whereas a more secular person might call zombies meaningless because they lack minds or a true self-awareness and identity. In either case, the point is similar. The concept of zombies allows people to emphasize that the body is not what matters most. The body dies. It is transient and insignificant in the grand scheme of things. The Walking Dead and other zombie apocalypse stories may be popular in part because they serve as reminders that living is more than just being an animated body. As humans, we do not want death to define us, because we know that death is unavoidable. Therefore, we redefine what it means to exist. We focus on the aspects of ourselves that continue beyond the depths of our fragile and always decaying bodies. Zombies exemplify this redefinition of what it means to exist. Zombies are just bodies. We believe that we are so much more. Apocalyptic visions. A zombie apocalypse may particularly fascinate people because the concepts of an apocalypse and zombies have great relevance to the human need for meaning. Apocalyptic thinking elevates perceptions of meaning in life. Apocalyptic visions involve themes of growth, redemption, meaningful relationships, and triumph over adversity. In addition, the concept of zombies may help people cope with one of the most potent threats to meaning, that is, mortality, because it reminds us that life is about more than being a physical, animated body. The Walking Dead, therefore, appeals to us in part because it beautifully illustrates the human struggle to find meaning in the face of mortality. It says that our struggle matters. Apocalyptic research. Though psychological theory and research supports the notion that apocalyptic narratives offer ways to envision new purpose and meaning, I wanted to test this possibility directly. Therefore, I conducted an experiment to see if having people entertain the idea of an apocalypse does in fact elevate perceptions of life as meaningful. In this study, I randomly assigned 90 research participants to read one of two articles. One article presented a case for a coming apocalypse, suggesting, among other things, that our planet is at increased risk of deadly viral pandemics. Similar to many zombie outbreak narratives, catastrophic natural disasters and dangerous geopolitical unrest. In short, this article served to focus participants' thoughts on the possibility that the world as they know it could come to an end soon. The participants in a control condition read an article about all the signs pointing to the death of the traditional brick-and-mortar bookstore, For example, increased online shopping for books. The idea was to have these participants also read a passage about a change in the world, but one that could not trigger apocalyptic thinking. After reading one of the articles, all the participants completed a questionnaire that assessed the extent to which they perceived their